This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
For daily content, follow Bartholomew Town on Instagram and TikTok.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.
Harrison Tuttle, BLMRI PAC. What's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, Bill. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm doing well.
Absolutely. Yeah, good. The folks at home can't see it, but you're like, your background right now is you floating over New York City.
I am, but unfortunately, I was playing basketball yesterday and sprained my ankle, so I'm in an elevated leg position right now.
Excellent, with an excellent background, the whole thing's, you know, working out. Well, sorry about that. That does suck, but hopefully you'll be back on the floor sooner than later.
Yes, yes, yes.
There's been a lot going on, certainly. In the Leobor conversation, it feels like it's a big year for Leobor. It is a big year for Leobor. You've been all over this issue. I guess just to start, for anybody who's really not that familiar with what the Law Enforcement Officer's Bill of Rights is and the efforts to, at minimum, reform Leobor, the acronym for that Bill of Rights, give us an overview of what it is and what it is currently what currently constitutes it and the challenges that come from that situation.
Sure. Well, you know, I think what's really important is that we discuss Leobor, but really the underlying cause of what Leobor is, which is police brutality. And really the question of how do we make sure that police officers, especially when it comes to excessive force, aren't getting to a place in which we have high-profile Leobor cases like this. But Leobor is essentially due process on top of due process. And what I mean by that is 35 states around the country, 15 states in the country have Leobor, 35 don't. Our New England region does not, for example, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Hampshire. And what Leobor is it's a panel of police officers. After a police department makes the decision, after an investigation in which the police department, and in this case, the police chief, makes the determination that an officer should be disciplined to a varying degree. It could either be a week, it could be termination. But a police chief makes that decision following an internal affairs investigation, and then an officer has an opportunity to essentially take another bite out of an apple. Now, this is a problem because, you know, when regular state employees, municipal employees, or any employees in general in the state of Rhode Island, because we're a state in which employers ultimately will make the final decision on discipline. And so if your police chief or if your boss, I should say, makes the decision that you should be fired based on departmental violations, you don't get a Leobor hearing, which is what police do here in this state, which is a panel currently of three officers. One officer that the union rep gets to pick, which is the officer who is being accused of, you know, a departmental violation. The other is a chosen officer from the police department. And then the third officer, as currently stated, is a neutral party. And that neutral party usually comes from a pick of a hat. And that pick of a hat goes back and forth as to whether the union or the police department get to pick every other Leobor case. Now, like I said, we've had very high profile Leobor cases. There are cases in which obviously have Officer Dolan, the Pawtucket police officer who shot a teenager in East Greenwich a couple of years ago. And then you have other cases in which, let's say, an officer doesn't decide to come to work, or an officer is intoxicated on the job that we may not hear about. And so there are varying degrees of LIABOR, but our organization, BLMRI PAC's stance is that we should remain consistent with the rest of the country when it comes to allowing police departments to have autonomy over their own officers.
Yeah, and of course, another major case in this discussion would be that of Jean Lugo. He, the former lieutenant governor and state Senate candidate who was captured on film by me, striking his opponent in a Senate race, Jen Rourke, after a series of, well, after a criminal trial and then LIABOR, you know, basically a slap on the wrist in that situation. That same officer also found sleeping in his cruiser on the job just a few months after that situation, the previous situation was resolved. Now we have the trial of Providence Sergeant Joseph Hanley. He was being tried for really the second time for allegedly assaulting a man back in 2020. And it ended in a mistrial. Right after this happened last week, your PAC called for allowing LIABOR hearings to take place without waiting for the criminal cases to conclude. So almost making, that's a big change. So allowing for the vocational disciplinary process to happen unrelated to any criminal proceedings. Why is that important?
It's important because, unfortunately, the way the law is written, we allow our police chiefs who are found criminally, possibly, to go through their criminal trial before going through their, of course, internal police department trial. And I say trial jokingly and in quotation because, of course, based on what we talked about, we shouldn't have officers go through two sets of disciplinary process. There should be one. But what our criminal justice system currently has, which is how it's been since really the pandemic, as our Attorney General Peter Noronha has stated, which is we have a backlog of cases. And separate from the fact that we're calling for police officers to be held accountable as soon as possible, as swiftly as possible, in the timetable that police departments feel appropriate after their internal investigation, we have a case in which LIABOR cases, even without a criminal trial in high-profile situations like Officer Lugo or Officer or former Pawtucket Police Officer Dolan, take at minimum a year. And so in this case, Officer Hanley was what the incident happened 4 years ago. And because we have a situation in which Officer Hanley is really gaming the system by understanding that he can drag out his LIABOR, his ultimate fate of discipline, in which the Providence Police Department wants to fire him, he can drag that out because he knows that if he can delay litigation in the criminal trial, that ultimately he can continue to keep collecting health benefits, which is at the taxpayers' hands. Right. And so our argument is not only from the fact that we should have officers that do something wrong, in which police departments all across Rhode Island, that if they commit something that the police department feels like they're unfit to serve, they should be gone immediately. Unfortunately, because of LIABOR, that is not the case. And so where the General Assembly is currently at with the reform process, we're calling to make sure that there is a set amount of days that LIABOR trials can occur, in which the public and also the police departments can know that they're not on the hook for paying for an unfit officer.
Right. That's like almost $6,000 in the case of Sergeant Hanley from a medical bill standpoint that the taxpayers are paying as the process moves on. So you mentioned the General Assembly. Of course, this has been, there was a lot of contention last year with this bill. Not, basically, it was killed at the end of session. The speaker made the argument that his Members didn't have an opportunity to fully study it. It just seemed like there wasn't an appetite to get that done last year. It seems like there is an appetite to get it done this year. What's your gut right now based on conversations you're having? Do you think by the end of this session, we'll have a LIBOR reform that passes both the House and Senate?
So we're moving in a positive direction. Of course, Senate President and the Speaker of the House have been on record for the past couple of years saying that this is a priority. And we're happy to know that, efforts to making sure that policing, especially when, you know, we have cases of misconduct, are being treated with the severity and the seriousness that it deserves. You know, last session was really interesting because I think this issue, really on all fronts, whether it is from a reform perspective or a repeal perspective, I think garners different reactions from different lawmakers and different people within the public. So right now, currently, where we stand is we believe that LIBOR will be addressed this year in terms of a reform. How that reform shakes out, we're not entirely sure. We know that the Senate had just passed in the beginning of session their reform version that passed at the end of last session, as you mentioned, Bill. But, you know, there are ongoing conversations with lawmakers that really want to make sure that whatever we pass is actually effective when it comes to holding police officers accountable in the process in which they follow. And so, I think there are ongoing discussions. I don't believe that there is a set bill currently within the General Assembly in which is going to be voted on. I do believe that there's going to be amendments made to possibly Representative Ray Hull's bill.
What did the police chiefs say to you, either on or off record, about this? Because the Police Chiefs Association has been in favor of, for some years now, in favor of LIBOR reform. You know, you can make an argument it's a job action type situation where you've got the rank and file in the union versus the management, for lack of a better term, and the police chiefs, and that there's a natural labor contention there. But it seems like this is also in a best practices, trying to really just have the best law enforcement operation you can have, is to obviously weed out those police officers that are seem either unfit for the job as a whole, or have to be, you know, there has to be some corrective action in some cases. But what are you hearing from police chiefs in general on this?
You know, the police chiefs, both during the last two hearings, both in the Senate Judiciary Committee as well as in the House Judiciary Committee, haven't taken a stance on a particular bill. More if they've taken a stance on the general concept of reform. What that is, I'm not entirely sure. I do know this. Despite the Rhode Island Police Chiefs Association, and really all of our police unions across the board, the Fraternal Order of Police, who have taken a stance on reform, particularly when it comes to the police chiefs, what BLMRA PAC is advocating for is for police chiefs to have more autonomy that is consistent with the rest of the country over their own police department. And so we are advocating essentially for police chiefs to have more power in decision making based on what their position and what the rest of the country shows us, which is that as the boss of an organization, as the boss of a municipal police department, you should have the final say as to whether or not an officer is fit to serve. And unfortunately, because that is not the case, because we leave it up to these, you know, officers that we may not figure out who's on the panel, who's not on the panel until months later, these, you know, essentially people that the public does not know, that does not trust, because we leave it into the decision-making of their hands a year, 4 years, maybe later, it creates this sense of delayed accountability, delayed transparency, as well as a process in which police chiefs are put on the hook for decisions that they made prior to the LIBOR hearing, in which they made sure that they wanted to have this certain type of discipline, and oftentimes in high profile cases in which I think our organization, lawmakers, and certainly the public expect a certain result, we get the complete opposite. Mm. And so whether or not the Rhode Island Police Chiefs Association supports a reform or not, we've seen cases in which in other states in which they have never had LIABOR and in which states have had LIABOR and have repealed it, such as Maryland, who was the first state in the country to introduce and have as law LIABOR, actually repealed it in 2020, 2 years after figuring out that a reform would not be as effective as they had thought that it was. So, you know, we are encouraged to continue to work with everyone, all the stakeholders. We know that this is not only an issue that pertains to, you know, excessive force and police brutality, but also how police are disciplined on minor infractions as well.
You know, lastly here, look, through, I mean, certainly before 2020, this is an issue that dates back, I don't know, for as long as I've been paying attention to the world, you know, and something that I was engaged with in New York. And it's not like it's a new flashpoint. 2020, after the murder of George Floyd, though, the conversation around police and police community relations and police brutality and systemic racism in law enforcement, all these conversations became mainstream, right? They went to another level. And we saw tremendous amounts of protest. We saw tremendous amounts of beyond protest, however you want to frame it. Some people would say rioting. I mean, we saw it in downtown Providence, police cruisers being set on fire and looting and things like that. I hate to tie those things together, but that was an unfortunate public relations deal because it basically took or gave ammunition, for lack of a better term, to opponents of any kind of police reform to say, oh, it's just a bunch of people who want to riot. I feel like that settled back down, and it's gone to a point where the general public consciousness around this issue is, especially after the Daniel Dolan situation, where you've got the shooting in West Warwick and in West Greenwich and others. I think the general public has an appetite for LIABOR reform, and it's not seen anymore as in this binary, you know, either you're, you know, going to wear a back the blue T-shirt or you're going to set a police cruiser on fire outside of the Providence Place Mall. That was almost the framing in 2020, as sick as that is. I feel like we've gotten to a point where, for lack of a better term, the middle ground is more aware of the need for reform here. Whether that translates into anything legislatively remains to be seen. But where are we at right now, just in your, from your standpoint, communicating to the random person in Coventry right now, pays little attention to this stuff, and what's the selling point to them if you happen to bump into them in the store somewhere and they don't have an opinion either way?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because, as you mentioned, Bill, there was this, you know, I've heard the phrase racial awakening, and that awakening also awakened some other people's thoughts, particularly on the far right, as to what they believe our country should be. And we're kind of seeing that also on a national stage. But, you know, I believe that Rhode Islanders do believe that everybody should have equal rights and should have those rights protected, whether it's, you know, whether you're a person of color, whether you are someone who wants to identify as whatever gender you believe that whatever gender you are born in. And so, you know, what I would say to the example that you used, Bill, on the individual in Coventry is that, look, we have a process in which these LIABOR trials take an enormous amount of capacity and time away from what we should actually be dealing with, which is the public safety element. How we're able to make sure that the public is safe, that folks within the community feel safe, that they are safe, and that they know that their police department is transparent throughout that process. And particularly the spokesmen for those police departments need to make sure that they have all the available tools to be able to communicate to the public, not just for the person in Coventry, but for the entire state. One thing that we haven't mentioned, Bill, that is still in law currently that I believe is going to be changed, which is the gag order, right? Which is when a police officer does something wrong and there is an investigation around Leah Board, the police chief cannot speak on the actual case. And because of that, that creates a lack of trust. It creates a sense of someone is hiding something from the general public. And so we have that, but we also have the fact that these Leah Board cases on average take above 60 grand per case, case in which an officer decides that he wants to go through this process. And when we have that situation, it creates an enormous burden on taxpayers as an individual. When we know that, when we look at throughout the state, all this money that is going to Leah Board trials could be going to something else, essentially, our bridges, our schools, you name it, can go to something like that. If we just had a process that is consistent with the rest of the country, which is police chiefs, police departments are allowed to make the decision after internal affairs, and that there is not due process on top of due process.
Harrison Tuttle, BLMRI PAC. Always good to see you, my friend.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks so much for having me.